Welcome to Everyday Martial Artist, a weekly podcast where you'll join me, Brian Doucette, as I interview a different martial artist each episode and hear their story. Some guests you may have heard of, and some you probably haven't. Be sure to subscribe where all your favorite podcasts are available. Also, visit our website at everydaymartialartist.com. If you're listening for a specific interview, I sure hope you'll stay and check out the other episodes. A very special thank you to Topher Williams for our custom theme music. And now, the newest episode of Everyday Martial Artist. Everyday Martial Artist is brought to you by KOOnline.com for all your martial arts needs. Sparring and safety gear, rank belts, uniforms, weapons, patches, and more. Wholesale supplies made by martial artists for martial artists. Visit us today at KO-Online.com. Hello and welcome to Everyday Martial Artist. I'm your host, Brian Doucette, and as you do every week, we're joined by a brand new guest talking about their life and their journey throughout the world of martial arts and other stuff they're involved in. My guest today is not only a martial artist, he's an athlete, author, speaker, a coach, a podcast host, actor, and so much more. He began his career as an athlete playing football for San Jose State University, played for the LA Rams and also in the Italian Football League for three seasons. Since 2002, he's been a mentor in the Young Storytellers program, which is dedicated to increasing literacy among inner-city youths. As an actor, you've seen him on such shows as First and Ten, The Bulls, used to love that show, Who's the Boss, Married to Children, Saved by the Bell, The College Years, Ellen, and more. And he's best known for the character of Nitro that he originated on the original American Gladiators. Please welcome my guest today, Dan Nitro Clark. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thank you for that very warm and kind introduction.
Well, hey, I appreciate your time. I know you're a little short on time, so we're going to jump right into it. What I want to do with all my guests, I want to go back to the very beginning, and I want to know where that first spark for martial arts came from for you.
I was living in Vietnam with my father. I was there's a couple American kids there. It was 1972 in the war. My dad had a restaurant in Saigon. He's an American. And he brought my brother and I over there when I was 8 and my older brother, Randy, was 10. And before that, we had never really, because we were living in Minnesota, we never really had seen or heard of martial arts. It was 1972.
Okay.
And when we got to Vietnam, there was this influx of martial arts. Oddly, I don't remember there being a Vietnamese martial arts, but they were studying a TKD, Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. And we had a Korean instructor who would come by the dad's restaurant. Well, we lived in the back in an apartment complex back there. So he'd come by and he started to teach my father and to teach us Taekwondo back in 72.
Wow.
And back then it was just, okay, what are we doing? I'm 8 years old. But then something that changed my perspective on martial arts, and I've talked to so many other people who've been martial artists for a long, long time, is we went to the American base in Tuncinute, and they had a movie theater, and they were playing a Bruce Lee movie.
Nice.
And I can't remember if it was Fist of Fury or Enter the Dragon, but all I knew is, number one, because I'm half Asian, I'm Japanese, mm-hmm. And half Caucasian, I saw someone on the screen for the first time who was a star that kind of looked like me. And I was like, wow, that guy's amazing, Bruce Lee. And I don't know, my older brother and I, we came out of the studio and we were like, you know, doing the different moves and each, you know, how do I say, you know, to each other. And that was my first brush with martial arts.
Wow, that's really cool. And how long did you train with that specific instructor?
Well, the country fell in 74, so mm-hmm. it was probably only about a year.
Okay.
And again, I don't think we had uniforms. It was very casual training, something that we just did as a hobby, I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah, then the country fell, so yep. We left. I left December 74 after being in Vietnam for 2 years and came back to California to live with my mother. And I still loved martial arts, and I still love Bruce Lee. But a funny thing happened on the way to the movies. I went and saw Rocky.
Nice.
And then, yeah, must have been, I don't know how old I was, 12 years old. And after I saw Rocky, I, you know, came out and I wanted to be a boxer.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it had that same effect. And then in high school, and I really didn't get back to martial arts for a while. And then in high school, there was another movie that came out. It was a Saturday Night Fever with John Travolta. These were the pivotal movies that shaped me. And then I wanted to be a dancer in New York.
Wow. That's awesome.
I didn't get back into martial arts until after After or during America? No, so during American Gladiators,
okay.
There was a guy, I was living in Los Angeles, Studio City. We had our first season of American Gladiators, and I must have been 23 years old. And we had these sticks we fought with, these pugil sticks, but they weren't the same ones in the military. But I wanted to train after I knew what we were doing and get better. I went down to the local Gold's Gym in North Hollywood, and there was this guy, and this guy just looked tough, and he was training this actress named Catherine Bach, who was Daisy Duke in Dukes of Hazzard. So this is, you know, going way back in time, and he was training her, and someone said, he's a karate champion, and I said, does he do weapons? And someone's like, yeah, he uses the bow staff and all this stuff. I'm like, okay. So I walk over to this guy and I say, hey, you know, I'm doing this TV show, American Gladiators. It's coming out soon. It's Universal. We didn't really know if it's going to do well or not, but we fight with these sticks, and I want to get better. So one of the things that I've always wanted to do, if there's something I'm going to do, I want to be proficient at it.
Yeah.
So I went and trained with this guy at his garage. He had just moved here from Boston, and his name was Billy Blanks.
Oh, nice.
So Billy Blanks, karate champion, ended up being the creator and of Taibo, which was a, you know, phenomenal piece of business and very inspirational for many people.
Yeah.
This was before Taibo existed. So I would go, and Billy Blanks didn't even have a karate studio at the time. So I'll go into Billy's garage, you know, a couple times, and, you know, we trained with the sticks, and then I started to get the love for martial arts back.
Nice.
And when we were in the off season, there was a taekwondo studio down the street in North Hollywood, and I don't remember the name, but I remember the instructor. He was the guy named Byung Yu.
Yes.
He's a Korean gentleman, and he, at the time, he must have been about 60, but this, you know, and I'm 24. You're 24, 25 years old, and someone's 60, as old as dirt.
Yep.
Right? Now I'm going to be looking at 60 very soon. I'm like, I feel young, I feel great, but as a 24-year-old, I saw this guy, he's like 60, and he's doing the splits, and, you know, he's walking on his hands, and, you know, like I said, center splits, side splits, and he jumping, spinning kicks, up chuggy, and I'm like, what? And so in the off season, I started to train with Byung Yu.
Oh, okay.
And I got my first belt with Byung Yu in Tang Soo Do.
Okay.
Then I moved out to about half an hour away, and I started training at another studio with a guy named David Howell, who's a wonderful teacher. And then I got a belt in traditional taekwondo.
Okay.
And those were my brushes back into martial arts.
That's cool. Did you ever get involved in the competition of martial arts, or not interested in that?
Not really. Okay. You know, for me, it was a cross between an art and a spiritual practice. I found that in Los Angeles, the spiritual practice wasn't there. It was a lot about the business of martial arts.
Right.
And so I had to, you know, go on my own path about that same time. You know, as I started to have success in my life in a different arena on TV, I had to go on my own path and start to study the Book of the Five Rings, Musashi, all these different things from that part of my mother's side of the heritage to find me a, you know, spiritual base. And I remember one gentleman who came in the studio who was a writer. His name was Joe Hyams.
Oh, yes. And Zen and the Martial Arts.
Yes. So he wrote that, and he was also a TV and film writer, but he was a friend of Master Yu's. And he wrote that, you know, foundational book, which, and that really, you know, in my early 20s, put me on a spiritual quest to find, you know, a peace within myself and a, you know, working in Hollywood, trying to understand more of a Buddhist philosophy without attachment.
Okay. Wow. I didn't realize you had met Joe Hyams. That's someone I always wanted to meet. I wish I could have when he was still with us, but I got to interview one of his really good friends, Tom Bleeker, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Tom or not, but not,
no,
also a writer. He's a screenwriter, and he's written a ton of books and martial arts books and biographies and stuff. And he wrote the book. He wrote the book on Benny the Jet. He wrote his biography.
Yeah. So Benny in Byung-Yu Studio, Benny would use his studio when he was in a transitory phase at his studio.
Okay.
He would come in a couple of days a week and train his fighters in Byung's studio. At least the way that's what I remember, because Benny had his studio next to North Hollywood Gold's Gym.
Yep.
In North Hollywood, and that closed down or something. I can't remember what happened, but I seem to remember he came into Master Yu's studio. And, you know, Master Yu was very, very, you know, connected in the world of martial arts. So I did a couple exhibitions with him.
Okay.
I'm the guy holding the boards.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I'm the guy holding the boards, guy, you know, cleaning up after him. You know, I'm not the guy, you know, breaking nine bricks with my elbow. But I did a couple exhibitions with him. But, you know, through him, I met, you know, Chuck Norris, who I later did a guest spot on Walker, Texas Ranger as an actor.
Yeah.
Who I had lunch with and became, you know, very loose friends with Bob Wall.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Right. Yeah. No, so it was, you know, and then Steven Seagal would come in sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the master grappler at these exhibitions, Gene LaBelle, would also, you know, would pop in. So I was, as a little kid who you know, looked up to martial artists, and even as a wide-eyed 24-year-old, to get to meet all of these different legends. I think even Danny Ensenada, is that his name?
Inosanto. Yep.
Inosanto would come around once in a while for these exhibitions. But so I was like a kid, you know, I was like, oh my God. It's almost similar with American Gladiators.
When, yeah.
You know, on the football side, a legendary Hall of Famer, Larry Zonka, became our co-host. Suppose,
yeah.
And it was very, very similar. I think you can equate that martial arts to, you know, all these legends to, you know, Larry Zonka, legend back in that time as well. Well, interesting enough, I was at a Comic-Con in Albuquerque, and I met the new Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, wow.
A guy named Jared Padalecki.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
He's from Supernatural.
Yeah, big, tall, strapping kid. And very tall. What a nice young gentleman he was.
Oh, you know,
he walked right over to my booth and was like, "Oh my God, you know, I used to watch you and I love you." And I was like, and like all the girls were, you know, chasing him and all this. I go, "Who is that guy?" And they're like, "You know, Jared from Supernatural." I go, "Well, I'm a fan of his. He's, you know, I think one thing that has been lost in the generations is just etiquette and politeness."
Yeah.
Right. You know, people, I have a 12-year-old and he calls our neighbors, you know, Mr. Brian, Mr. Joe, Mr. Mm-hmm. Dave. It's not, "Hey, buddy."
Yep.
"Hey, dude, how you doing?" No, you respect people. You know, you respect people and you show that respect every time you meet them and you see them.
I've had so many of my guests, "You don't have to call me sir." I'm like, "I've been in martial arts for 40 years. I'm going to call you sir. I'm sorry." it's a habit.
Well, it's the same thing for me as well, you know, Brian. But it's funny, my significant other, she's, you know, a few years younger than me. I call her ma'am just out of habit. She's like, "I'm not a ma'am. I'm younger than you. Do not ma'am me."
Nice.
And even with the 12-year-old, you know, I call him sir.
Yep.
I give him respect as well. I say, "Young sir, how you doing today?" And it's not militant or all. It's just a sign of respect. I call him young sir. I call him champ. I call him young king. You know, and every once in a while he says sir to me, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
My father was, you know, "You call me sir, you know, you're going to meet the back of my hand."
Yep.
You know, it's more of a, like, it's more of a, just a, like, look, respect yourself, you know, and live up to that. And I respect myself and respect each other.
Nice. That's such a cool story. I know. I think I was 21. I took a road trip with my buddy to California. We drove from Minnesota to California to go to the Long Beach Internationals in August of 95. And at that tournament, I got to meet Benny the Jet and Gene LaBelle. And it was like, same thing, just starstruck. I was just like, wow. And then 6 months ago, I got to interview Benny on my podcast. So it's kind of the same type of thing. It's like a lot of these guys that I met at tournaments when I was an 18 to 20 some year old, I'm now interviewing on my show, which is so cool. And people that I'm a big fan of, and obviously working in radio, all my life, I try to not get as starstruck, but sometimes it's hard. You know, realizing, you know, I mean, I watched American Gladiators religiously. So, I mean, it's pretty cool that I'm talking to Nitro right now. That's really cool. I mean, huge, huge, huge.
It's cool. It's It's cool to be here too, Brian, as well.
I appreciate
it's
that.
Interesting about being, you know, being in Hollywood. It's, you know, there's so many people here. Like I was about 6 months ago, I was meeting a couple buddies for dinner down at a little sushi place in Studio City. And one of the guys is my good friend for 20 years. And I know his cousin pretty well, but not nearly as well as I know my buddy, Tog, T-A-G, they call him Tog. And he says, oh, yeah, my cousin's bringing a buddy with him. So, great. Sitting down, and Chuck Liddell walks in and sits at our table.
Wow. That's kind of cool. And,
yeah. You know, I was like, it was interesting. To, you know, Chuck was a decent gentleman, very kind, very respectful, very, you know, just a regular dude. And I think anybody who's in the public eye looks for those time and places where they can just be a regular dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To find those little pockets where you're just a regular dude.
Yeah.
Right. And I know I enjoy that. So when I meet someone who's in the limelight, I treat them like I want to be treated, like a regular dude. Hey, yeah, man, how you doing?
Exactly.
You know, see you. What are you up to? Oh, yeah, where are you from? You know, and I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah. I've been lucky in my life. I've met a lot of celebrities through different jobs and stuff. And I can honestly say only two of them have been jerks. And all the celebrities I've met, only two of them have been jerks. So I've been pretty lucky, pretty good streak there.
I've met a lot of people, and I can only think of a few experiences where people weren't kind. You know, but again, I think it's probably the circumstances. It's always whoever introduces you to somebody. I think if it's one of their friends, it's a lot different than if you're walking up on the street and say, "Oh my God, I love your show. Can I get your picture?"
Yep.
You know, as soon as someone comes up and asks me for a picture, I'm always flattered. Oh yeah, sure, thanks. But in my mind, they go into a certain category.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If someone calls me Nitro, which someone I walked on the street, Nitro, I go, okay. They go, those are people who are, you know, fans of the show from the past. And we can be very friendly.
Yeah.
But they just go in a different bucket, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I love what you said too about the respect. And I've been lucky. I've interviewed two young people on my show that are at the time were under the age of 18. One was 16, one was 14 at the time. And they were both just the most well-mannered, respectful people I've ever met. And one of them was a big Hollywood person. And I actually had the pleasure of meeting him in person, and hands down the most respectful young person I've met in my life.
Now, who is that?
Ian Armitage, young Sheldon. If you watch the show.
No. Yeah. It just came on Netflix. My
exactly.
loves that show.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a black belt under Junry, not under Junry, but under one of Junry's students. He'd been training since he was four. He got his black belt when he was, 14.
Junry, he's still out here?
No, he passed away, but one of his students out in DC runs his school, and that's where Ian trains. So
I thought Junry had schools in Los Angeles.
He probably did. I mean, he had schools all over when he was still going.
Yeah, no, he had schools out here in Los Sanders, one off Wilshire Boulevard.
Nice.
You know who used to come in? There were two stunt guys. The Dragon Twins, those guys were from back east. They actually came on the Gladiators and participated as contestants. But there were two other stunt guys, and they're nice guys. Simon Ree would come in. You know, I get my universes mixed. I was just talking to Billy Blanks, was it 2 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to him. And when Billy opened his karate studio, on Beverly Glen. This is before Taibo. He first opened a karate studio, Ventura and Beverly Glen in Sherman Oaks.
Okay.
It was on Saturday. They had open fight days.
Nice.
Just all these different styles. People would come in. And it was, I remember Jean-Claude would come in.
Van Damme.
Yeah. And some other really, Van Damme would come in. And there were some other interesting fighters and people that would come. But his studio was celebrity central. Yeah. I mean, Bruce Jenner, Magic Johnson,
wow.
LL Cool J, Queen Latifah, Paula Abdul. Because there was location, so many different people came in. And what he did was, how do I provide a fitness program for people who don't want to take karate?
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And it turned out well. And so, after Byung-Yu, the only time I started thinking about having a fight, I was also training with Freddie Roach, who's one of the legends in boxing over at his boxing studio in Hall off Vine. I can't think of the name of it now. Freddie, what is Freddie Roach's studio's name? Can you think of his boxing gym?
I should know it. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, that's okay. I can't, but yeah. And Freddie was such a, you know, nice, welcoming guy. And I trained there with the trainer for like 2 years. And, you know, I think, you know, like you said, everything is fun till you get hit in the face.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I started sparring a little bit, and I just didn't like getting punched in the face.
The Wild Card Boxing Club. There you go.
Yeah. Wild Card. Yep. That's yeah. Over off Santa Monica and Vine.
Yep.
So I was over there boxing with him. I was taking jujitsu with Eddie Bravo. Oh,
nice.
It wasn't at 10th Planet because it was at 10th Planet, but he had a gym on Hollywood and some street with Randy Couture.
Okay.
And they were going to open up a whole series of these gyms under with him and Randy Couture partnered there. And then I think the celebrity fighting thing was coming up.
Okay.
And a guy called me and he said, do you want to fight Jose Canseco? And I said, in a New York minute.
Nice.
Yeah, let's go. You know, so I was boxing and you know, I had the TKD background.
Yep.
And I was grappling over there at 10th Planet or 9th Planet, 10th Planet with Eddie yep. Bravo, who's yeah. you know, fantastic dude. For about 18 months. And before that was the Machados for about 6 months.
Nice.
And I was like, let's do it. Fight that guy and get paid. It just never materialized. So that was the closest.
That'd have been cool.
Yeah. Closest to having a fight. And I would have done it. You know, what are you going to do? You probably have like 16 ounce gloves. And,
nice.
But yeah. And so that was the closest I have actually came to competing.
Okay. So do you still get time to train now or not as much?
No, not as much. You know, when I was training, I hadn't done TKD for a while, and I switched over to boxing and to jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And then I just, when the Jose Canseco thing didn't materialize, I just was like, you know, I'm a grown man. I'm, you know, however old I was at the time, 45 years old. I said, well, what am I doing at lunchtime rolling around with a bunch of, you know, other grown men?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got the cauliflower ear, had to have it drained a couple times. I was getting, I know I sound like such a wuss, but I just said, you know, my time can be, you know, spent doing other things. So yeah. I transitioned out of that and just kept going to Freddy's once in a while. And then, you know, life just took me in different directions. I think I found CrossFit and started to compete in CrossFit.
Oh, cool.
You know, made it to, never made it to the games, but, you know, was in the top for my age group, towards the top. I think the highest, I think I got 30th in the world one year. And then I went to a Wadapalooza in Miami. They had qualified 20 people from all over the world. You know, I was there. I wasn't, you know, the best, but I was there. And, you know, that's, I find something I like. Yeah. I go. And plus the highlights of the TKD, you know, it's the jumping high and flying kicks and stuff. Yep. And in order to maintain those as you get older, it takes so much time working on your flexibility.
Yes, it does.
You know, that Master Yu, that one dedicated human being, you know, he would, besides teaching his classes, weight training, and he would work out Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays for 3 hours.
Wow.
And it would be 1 hour of stretching every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Wow.
And they stretch the old way, mm-hmm. where they put you up against a wall, they put paper under your feet, you got into center splits, and someone sat on your back.
Oh, yeah. I've done that a few times, too.
Yeah, and you screamed, and yep. you screamed for about 6 months, and all of a sudden, once you went flat and you could get center splits, you stopped screaming.
Yeah. Wow.
It was the same thing with side splits. You know, someone pushed or put something under your socks on the carpet, and someone pushed you and sat on you until you went all the way down. I don't know if you get arrested for that nowadays.
I used rollerblades on the linoleum floor in my college apartment to try to stretch. Just put the wheels up and go out as far as I could.
Yeah, even back then I even had one of those
stretching things machines.
You put your legs in, you crank the center of it, so, you know, it helped yep. me get the splits, because I had the full splits.
Wow.
I had full center splits, and again, I didn't get them as a young kid. I got them as a, what was that, 27, 28 years old, and kept them till probably cool. I was like 35.
Wow.
And even now, because of putting that work in, I think at a later age, if I spend, you know, half hour, 35 minutes working, you know, loosening up, I can get pretty close to the side splits at 59. I'm like, oh, okay. Wow. And for 210 pounds?
Yeah.
So some of that training sticks with you.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to talk about your books quickly. Just talk a little bit about what led you to decide to write your first book, and just talk a little about the books you've written.
So my first book, Gladiator, True Story of Roid's Rage Redemption. I started writing as soon as I moved to Los Angeles to pursue a career in show business. I didn't really move here to be an actor. I moved here to be an action star.
Okay.
Yeah, I was inspired by Rambo and Terminator.
Nice.
And when I finished playing football, I saw those buff guys. And I said, well, if they could do it, why can't I? You know, and neither of those guys had acting training. And, you know, Arnold couldn't even speak English, you know, mm-hmm. without an accent. And I said, yeah, if they could do it, I can. And, you know, I was 22, 23 years old and just had this tremendous belief that anything was possible. So I moved to Los Angeles. And you know, about a year here, I always heard people say, you have to create your own material. You have to create your own material. So I didn't know how to type. So I bought a typing program. I think it was Pac-Man Teaches Typing or something. I bought a little computer, taught myself to type, you know, dove in and read a bunch of books on screenwriting. Because at first I started to screenwrite because I thought, like, it's not as intimidating, because if you've ever seen a script page, there's a lot of blank space.
Yeah.
Where a book, there's, you know, prose on every page. You know, it's just lines and lines of words. Like, oh my God, I could never write that many words. But I knew I had stories that I wanted to tell. So I went and spent 6 or 7 years, you know, writing screenplays, teaching myself to type. Took 7 years before I finally sold a script.
Wow.
Which was great. Got in the WGA. I think it was about, I think 6 years in, I'm trying to think, 95, I wrote and directed a movie, Looking for Bruce, which I'm very, very proud of. And then after Gladiators, I was still writing movies, written a couple of movies for different places, different studios. And Gladiators was over. And I just said, you know what? I want to tell my story. About, I make it a memoir, but with the backdrop of, you know, American Gladiators, so it'll have more of a platform to sell, mm-hmm. right? Because that's, you know, what I'm known for. But I just said this was a book by Danny Lee Clark, huh? No, you know, it's the Gladiators is the backdrop. So I wrote a very personal memoir about, you know, growing up and with a Marine father, Japanese mother, you know, living in Vietnam, having my older brother die in an electrical accident when I was 10, he was 12 in my arms. Wow. And just the whole journey of, you know, wanting to be seen, you know, survivor's guilt, you know, told with the backdrop of the creation of American Gladiators. And a lot of that stuff, material ended up in the docuseries that I sold and produced for Netflix, Muscles and Mayhem.
Great series, yes.
Yeah, I think that's why there's a little more depth to it than something just purely exploitative, where there's a human story. There's the you know, pain to purpose story in it for a lot of us, because I said I want to put something out that talks about the human condition, that that talks what it means to be human, that lets you know these people that you watched on TV, but also brings you back to the time. It's nostalgic, makes you laugh. It brings you back to when, you know, the 90s, when you were a kid and you're watching it with your parents, or you and your brother were jousting in the backyard. We also thought it was super important to catch the nostalgia of that area to bring some comfort to people as they watched it, so they could, you know, laugh and smile. So I wrote that first book, Gladiator, True Story of Roid's Rage Redemption, about then, and that was the intellectual property for the docuseries on Muscles and Mayhem on Netflix. Nice. That was so it was good. And then 10 years ago, when I had a heart attack and I almost died, I just had this profound experience, which you hear so many people do when their mortality comes into question or into doubt. And it just taught me, I learned a different way to live. And I wanted to share two things. I wanted to write what I learned as a way to remember it. I wanted to write the lessons and the things that became important to me as I faced my death. So if I lived, I would remember how I wanted to live. So I was writing all these things down, And I was shared with a few people and they're like, oh, this is really good. You should write a second book about these things. You know, people need to understand and learn resilience. People need to learn not so much about the path to happiness, but more about the path to fulfillment and different lessons and practical tips they could use while still telling a good story. So the second book is F Dying, How Cheating Death Kicked My Ass into Living, Loving, and something, Living a Better Life. I don't have that one in front of me, so I can't do the titles up.
Yeah.
But they both were, you know, they both did fantastic and they both were bestsellers and very proud of them. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I'll put links out there for both of them for sure when the show comes out. And then I definitely want to talk about your podcast because you're a fellow podcast host. Talk a little bit about that, why you decided to launch that and what people can hear if they tune in.
Well, you know what? I don't do the podcast anymore, Brian. I stopped about 2.5 years ago. Okay. I did 40 episodes. And for me, it was exploration. I'm always out exploring. You know, something's interesting to me, I go and explore.
Okay.
And I explored that and I loved doing it. Then during COVID, it just got hard to get guests. And for me, the admin part of it, which you so bravely do, you know, it just takes a lot of tenacity.
Yeah.
And you have to really love what you're doing. And for me, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. So after about 40 episodes, I said, okay, I'm good. I did this. Proud of myself. I'm proud of all the guests I had on. And I'm going to move on to something else.
And it's still out there. People can still listen to the old episodes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's called the Gladiator Way. And I, you know, I had Olympic athletes on. You
nice.
Know. You know, millionaires on, fitness experts on, happiness experts on. I had a lot of fantastic, you know, meditation coaches on, a lot of fantastic people and very, very, very proud of it. I think what actually happens, I started to work on Muscles in Mayhem.
Oh, okay.
The docuseries, because I sold that to Netflix about 3 years ago. And it took that long from selling the concept to bringing the directors on, to partnering with another production services company, to doing the interviews, and then, you know, 13-month editing schedule, plus they dub it into, you know, 150 different languages, which takes 3 months when you're done.
Yeah.
So it was a 3-year endeavor. Okay. So I went from podcasts to Muscles and AM on Netflix.
Cool. And what I tell a lot of my friends who do podcasting is that you need to be proud, because the average person who launches a podcast doesn't get past episode 7. So the fact that you hit 40 is pretty impressive. So yeah, that's definitely something to be proud of.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I just, you know, appreciate your grit to stick with it, you know, and you found something, you know, martial arts that you're passionate about, that you love, and you have a particular category. I think if you're not specific, if you're launching a podcast, and it's more about interviewing top performers and celebrities, then you're in a game where you're chasing people like everyone else is. And, yep. You know, the people with the bigger mouthpieces, you know, the Joe Rogans, the Conan O'Briens, you know, I knew I was like, you know, when I think it was it Obama and Bruce Springsteen had a podcast or something like that together?
Yeah, I remember something about that. Yeah.
And I was like, that's who I'm competing against. Yeah. And I was like, what? And I was like, okay, you know what? If I had to go back and do a podcast again, I would be very, very specific about my audience. I would try to go in and with that principle of finding 1,000 true fans.
Yep.
Right. Which is, if you think you need 1 million fans to be successful, go search Google an article called 1,000 True Fans, and it will tell you if you got every fan, you provided them with tremendous value, you know, through books, shirts, whatever, and they spend $100 a year, you would have $100,000 of income. And you can scale that as you go up. So I think if I was going to do a podcast, I'd be very specific. I would do it for males over 40 years old who want to get in shape, who want to exercise, who are looking for the latest, I won't call them hacks, but the you know, different types of therapeutic peptides, you know, how to train, what to do for back injuries. I would be very, very specific and then really, really go in depth and fill that category, giving it something that nobody else can, because who I am and what I've done in my life. God, you're making me want to go do a podcast, Brian.
Hey, I'm hoping you do. I'll definitely tune in and promote the heck out of it. Well, I know you're kind of short on time, so I got some fun questions I usually wrap up the show with, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
So the first one, in all your years since you started in martial arts and throughout your life, is there one philosophy that's at the top of your list?
Non-attachment.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's just that's always stuck with me, that the root of despair, unhappiness is attachment.
Okay. All right. Now, this one doesn't have to be exactly four. I've had people give as few as two names and as many as eight. But who are like three or four names you would put on your personal Mount Rushmore of martial arts?
Bruce Lee.
Nice.
I would say Chuck Norris.
Cool.
I mean, those are the, you know, when I was younger, I had heroes.
Yeah.
And as I've grown older, I realize people have done great things, but they're a human just like I am.
Yeah.
So I really don't have heroes anymore. And because even some of the great men I've met and I've admired, once I've got to really know them, I see, you know, everyone's flawed just like we are.
Yep.
So it would be back at a time when I was still young and had heroes. So I would say Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris. I think those are the two guys that would. Look, a present day guy, John Jones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Right. I mean, guy's never been beat. He's gone from lightweight to heavyweight. For, you know, again, a troubled guy.
With, yeah.
I wouldn't say he's a troubled guy. He's probably a pretty darn happy guy, but he's a guy, you know, who's had some challenges with the law. I would say, you know, we're not talking boxing, so we're just talking martial arts.
I've had people put boxing. I mean, boxing's a martial art. I've had people put Muhammad Ali on there. So
definitely Muhammad Ali. He not only changed boxing, he changed the planet.
Yeah.
You know, he changed the world. So probably the most famous athlete ever. So those would be my four.
Oh, that's a great Mount Rushmore. Awesome. All right. Do you have you can't pick one of your own, obviously, but do you have a favorite martial arts book?
Zen and the Martial Arts.
Nice. I love it.
And then let me look at my shelf. I've got about seven of them.
Okay.
Well, that's Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Riding.
Nice.
Karate Do. I'm looking at, you know, the books are too small and they're too far away.
That's okay.
But Bruce Lee's book, I can't see it.
Tao of Jeet Kune Do.
The Tao of Jeet Kune Do. I've got Budo up there. I've got Zen training. So it's gotten more into philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all. I can't see my books.
Anytime anyone mentions Joe Hyams, man, I'm a fan because that's usually the one I pick too. So that's good. All right. How about a favorite martial arts video game? Did you ever get into games?
No. Okay. I wasn't a gamer.
All right. No worries. A gamer.
Into the Dragon, though. Into the Dragon, by far my favorite martial arts movie ever.
Okay. Yeah, that question was coming up, so that's good.
Yeah, I was showing my 12-year-old a clip of it on YouTube, you know, and he's in Master Han's, you know, cellar down, and he has the hand, and he cuts across his abs, and Bruce is like, licks the blood and goes, come on, you know, and the famous nunchuck scene, come on.
I brought my 20-year-old son to it this past August because it was the 50th anniversary and it actually played in our local theater. So I got to see it on the big screen for the first time, which was cool.
Oh, so cool. Yeah,
so cool. So cool. All right. How about a favorite martial arts TV show?
That one, it would be Kung Fu with David Carradine.
Nice.
Again, when I was a young kid, that was on. And, you know, I think, I don't even know if he was Asian.
No, he wasn't.
Was Carradine Asian?
You know, and he got a lot of flack for it because originally, I mean, the show was written for Bruce Lee and they didn't want to cast Bruce Lee because he looked too Asian. So they gave the role to David Carradine.
Yeah, it makes me not like it as much. But look, no fault to David Carradine's.
Yeah.
Right? No fault to David Carradine's. It was a job. He was out there. But growing up, again, that part of myself that was not represented a lot, the Japanese side from my mother, wasn't represented a lot because my father had such a strong, you know, Marine gung-ho personality. You know, we were going to be Americans. Mm. That show was like, oh, there's something else that's, you know, that's softer, that's humble, that's got a different way to be in the world. And something about the way he was in the world touched me inside and moved me.
That's cool. And if you're a fan of that and a fan of Bruce Lee, if you've never seen the show The Warrior, I highly recommend it. Or it's just called Warrior. Sorry. It's coming to Netflix in March. Shannon Lee is actually the producer of it, executive producer. And it's based on Bruce Lee's notes for Kung Fu. It's what Kung Fu was supposed to be if Bruce Lee would have been in it back then. And
that's so cool.
Phenomenal.
I feel like I had a conversation with Shannon Lee somewhere along the way. I can't remember if I did or I didn't. I just,
they're remaking Kung Fu. As a movie, Donnie Yen is going to star in it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I like that.
All right, final question. This one doesn't have to be a martial arts movie. Any movie you've ever seen, favorite movie fight scene?
I would have to go back to Bruce Lee.
Nice.
The fight with Bob Wall into the dragon was fantastic. They have their hands up together and pop, pop, he hits him in the face. And then he jumps up in the air and lands on him and kills him, gets revenge for his sister. That probably was probably my favorite fight scene. I mean, there's been tons of good ones. When Seagal first came on, Above the Law, what he was doing, no one ever seen before on screen. That was great.
Yeah.
Not Benny the Jet, but there was the guy from, well, Jackie Chan.
Oh, right. Yeah,
Jackie definitely. Chan, which was not so much a fight scene, but his acrobatics, and then Jet Li, all the stuff those guys could do. And then I did a movie 12 years ago, 15 years ago with this kid who's a great martial artist. It was like a low budget, what was it called? It wasn't like Navy SEALs, but it was
Special Forces.
Yeah. There was a kid, Isaac somebody, a nice guy, was a director, but there's a kid on there.
Isaac Florentine. One of
his first roles. Yeah, Isaac Florentine. Yeah. I met him through Master U.
He's actually a former guest, and also another person who was in that movie with you, Marshall Teague, has been on my show too.
Yeah, Marshall was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy. Scott Adkins.
Oh, yeah.
Big karate guy, big stunt guy, was in the last Wick movie. The stuff he can do on screen. And the movie I directed, there was a guy who played my younger brother. Gosh darn it. Damn. As soon as I hang up, I remember the kid's name. Dan.
Oh, looking for Bruce.
Looking for
Dan
Bruce.
Southworth.
Yeah, Dan Southworth. Yeah, Dan. Okay. And that guy also has done tons of stunts in martial arts. So the way those guys, Dan Southworth and Scott Adkins, can move their bodies. And apologies, Dan, like my younger brother, but I've been hitting the head so many times. Sometimes it just doesn't come quite as quick.
I'm hoping to get Scott on the show. Isaac said he'd ask him for me, so fingers crossed. I'd love to chat with Scott Adkins.
So Scott was great. We chummed after that movie. He was living in Los Angeles for about a year, and we would go do Runyon Canyon, hang out, go eat and train. But I really haven't been in contact with him since that year he lived here.
Nice.
I'd love to reconnect with him as well.
Well, I know you got to get going, but I truly,
yes,
truly appreciate the time you've given, and I think people are going to love this episode. I can't wait till it comes out.
Well, thank you, Brian, for having me on. It was you're doing such a good job with this, and again, I appreciate your longevity and what you're putting out there. So thanks for being kind enough to include me as a guest.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist. We hope you will join us every week for a brand new episode with a different martial artist telling their story. If you enjoy the show, be sure to leave us a review. Also, be sure to check out our website at everydaymartialartist.com. There you can find all of our episodes and contact us to suggest guests and ask questions. Again, thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist, and we'll see you next week.